Good morning.
Hey.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Hey, Rob. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, hanging in there.
So what do you think of your first bear market?
Oh, well, you know what? It was my first circuit breaker, too. I didn't know what to think. It's interesting. You prep clients, and it seems like, the same folks call in and just want to talk through it, you know. I think more than anything, it creates a good, it's a good communication with clients. And for those that hold fixed income, this is where we really start providing our value when you got the entire yield curve below 1%. I mean, it's crazy.
Right.
And so it's when people think they're conservative and they're not really conservative anymore. Kind of walking through people that's interesting with that is very interesting.
It's very hard to earn earn an income when the yield curve looks like that.
Yeah, and you know, anybody that's owned bonds, they're so highly appreciated right now that, I mean, you got to wonder how much juice there is to squeeze out of that lemon.
Oh, there'll be a little more.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, well, so much of the future rate cuts and things like that are already priced in, too. That, you know, even if they happen, you're not going to see. I don't know. It's just very interesting right now.
Yeah, you got a full-on panic going right now, which is interesting. That's what I expected, you know. I kind of expected 3,000 points today. But that's, the day is not over.
Yeah. We've come back a lot, really.
We'll see if it tries to, you know, it's rallied, what, from 1,700 down to 1,200?
We almost got to 2,000.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It was interesting. I had a client call me today, and they were worried about liquidity, and they wanted to just take, like, some of the money even out of a money market. So, I don't know. I thought that was interesting, too, which at current yields, I wasn't going to argue with it because the trade-off isn't really, you know, you're getting a little bit more, but it's not substantial.
Right. No, they, there was a point during the other crisis where the market dropped. I mean, there was a worry about money market funds, liquidity. That's when all the stops were pulled out. But that Monday, you know, they weren't sure that you could get when a couple of funds broke the dollar.
Yeah.
And that was, whoa, that's really was scary.
Yeah. Well, they've changed the money market rules now too, but.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's I don't know. We'll see. I'm not as worried about all the coronavirus stuff. I am more worried about the whole oil war, if you want to, you know, call it that. Yet.
You are? Oh, I don't worry about that. What are you worried about there?
Just the developments. I mean, you've got a triple B market that's already stressed. You've got energy being the primary issuer in that market. They're highly levered. I think you've already got companies that are overly levered on the energy front. Energy is now down 40% on the year.
Right.
After being down, gosh, I think they were down even last year.
Right.
I just worry about it. If Saudi wants to keep those prices that low for that long, you are going to see a spillover into the U.S. markets in that sector. My concern is I don't know what impact that's going to have on the rest of the economy.
Talks extra stimulus. The energy side of the economy used to be very big. It's a small part of the economy now.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, relatively speaking to the 80s. So it's actually, you cut the price of oil in half for automobiles, airlines, cruise ships, United States Navy, other things. That's quite a stimulus. Puts a lot of money in people's pocket. That's
mm-hmm.
you know, it's probably putting $1,500 in the average person's pocket a year.
Yeah.
And so.
Because that's what I've
seen
most of the worry about today, though, is not as much coronavirus as much as oil.
Oh, I think it's coronavirus.
Okay.
The oil thing is, I mean, the big guys will just eat up the small guys. I mean, they'll be back. There'll be a lot of natural gas companies. Not a lot, but, you know, the ones that you're expected to go out will go out.
Mm-hmm.
Chesapeake Oil, they will go bankrupt. And then, you know, the big natural gas guys will come in and eat up, mop up the rest of the shale producers and so forth until there's hardly anybody left. But little. So you don't want to be in that business. You don't own the companies. You don't own any of the MLPs or any of that crap. But it's a natural thing in commodities. You know, commodities go up and down. And it just shows you really how much the Saudis kept the price of oil inflated. Tyler, think about it, right?
Yeah.
This is really the natural price right here. Without the Saudis not producing what they want to produce. So you're, you know, OPEC just busted up. And unless they have an emergency meeting and all get together, which they probably will, and, you know, this is the Saudis cracking the whip on Russia and saying, you want to play this game? We got $10 oil, okay?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what started all this, was OPEC got together last week and some of the alliances broke down.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, we always hated OPEC anyway.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see OPEC break up. I mean, you are used to it. You think it's a permanent condition, but OPEC never existed. You know, when I was growing up, and so prices were wherever they were. And so when they created OPEC, it artificially inflated the price of oil and made us pay more for generations, you know.
Sure.
And then
free
all
market.
Of a sudden, yeah, there was no free market. That's why they called it OPEC. And then and then we got in the business and screwed them up and changed the dynamics. And so we don't need them anymore. Now, we want the price of oil up because it's a big part of our – or it's a part of our economy, important part.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to join OPEC ever. And as long as we don't, then they can't control the price of oil like they used to.
Yeah.
So just, you know, you want to kind of put that into your calculator and say, kind of game over for controlling the price of oil. Now, should it be 40 or should it be 25? Should it be 60?
It's well, probably, that's the beauty of it being a free market now.
Yeah,
you know,
it's probably right where it's supposed to be right now. You know, about contango is when the futures are lower than the present. And that's what's happening. I think the futures were down even more this morning. And so what it's really saying is the price is going lower, not higher.
Yeah.
So
well, the futures were hard to ballpark this morning because the futures hit a circuit breaker, so they quit trading. They
right.
quit showing, you know, how far we were going to go or where we were going to go. And I think that kind of spread fear as well. So you saw a market that wasn't trading necessarily on fundamentals, but as much as, you know, what the hell is going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. And you saw whenever, you know, gold goes down, that means people are selling anything that has value. And they were selling gold, and they were selling Bitcoin. You know, Bitcoin got crushed.
Mm-hmm.
So that this is this crazy program trading gone crazy plus, you know, throw in a coronavirus, throw in an OPEC crash. You're getting a little bit of a perfect storm.
Yeah. You know what? It's interesting, and I think a lot of folks didn't realize this, too. Last week, for all the volatility we saw, the Dow was positive.
Huh.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, no. I mean,
positive, almost 2%.
I didn't feel that way.
I know. Nobody did. I couldn't believe it. I had to look at a chart when I heard that.
I think we're, you know, we'll see. I think, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows right now. That's the interesting thing. Nobody quite knows anything about anything right now. It's all sort of, you know, beyond man's comprehension.
Yep. I think you just have to look at the big picture right now of, you know, where was the market? Where is it gone? Kind of look at fundamentals, you know, because so much of the market right now, you can't try to estimate. It's just, you know, it is what it is. So what can we kind of try to lean on for some direction and what makes sense?
Right.
It's hard.
So how's your prospecting going?
It's going good. It's been busy. This month is going to be a busy month in a good way. It seems like every once in a while you just kind of hit these streaks where things just kind of come out of the woodworks and they just happen unexpectedly, which is, I think that's just a positive of, you know, just general activity.
Right.
So we've got a company that Trent works with that he's worked with a couple of the original owners for a long time, and they're a pretty large company. And we're still trying to get our hands on everything, but that would be huge. I don't think we will in the foreseeable future. But I started servicing like the family office accountant, and we brought him on as a client, just doing more for them. And they've asked us to come out later this month, and they talked kind of what we've done to the executive board. And so we've got five meetings back to back to back in one day just with the executives. And
wow.
It sounds like we're going to bring in some business from that too. So that'll be really good.
So what do you think is the key to that, what you were able to do in that relationship?
Well, I think the key is, so the family office accountant kind of does everything there, right? And so we've always worked with the owners and done a lot for them, but I don't know if they, you know, everybody waits on them hand and foot. You know, they're kind of used to it. So we kind of started working with the family office accountant and giving him the same level of service, and he's just been awesome. He's been kind of amazed with everything that we do. And so, you know, he's kind of passed that on then to, you know, he knows if he tells us, hey, I need this done, it gets done. And that's it. He doesn't have to mess with it.
Right.
Which in his world is huge because he's used to everybody telling him that, and then he has to figure it out. So by making his life easier, all of a sudden, you know, it's easier because I'm sure he does some work for others on the board. And so,
how many in the family office, family members, and are there other people in the family office group to take advantage of it? And then how many employees do they have in the family office group?
I don't know. That's a great question. I'd have to talk to Trent about that. He's done a lot more work with them. I started working with the owner's son recently. He's in his mid-30s. So I've started working with him more. And then Trent's always worked kind of with the owners. They're just longtime clients of his. So that's something that we're going to definitely game plan because this has all happened pretty quickly. I mean, like we've worked with the office accountant for less than a year. So it just kind of happened. I feel like that's a pretty quick turnaround to all of a sudden start being referred into the entire business. So that's something I need to talk to Trent about. We'll see. But it's definitely, you know, we're going to try to spread our fingers as wide as we can in there.
What do you think they need that they weren't getting?
I think holistic advice. So from the perspective of, you know, the investments, great. You know, everybody does investments. But I think, you know, we've kind of talked to them about our growth strategy, how we have a sell discipline, how we, you know, kind of manage it in-house so you're not paying for, you know, for us and then mutual funds and then, you know, it's simple. I think on top of that, a lot of the planning that we do with trust services, things like that. I can tell you one thing that was big was nobody, for whatever reason, nobody at the company had ever heard of a backdoor Roth.
Hmm.
And so we start telling them that they can contribute and they're like amazed because they're very top heavy, so they can't contribute much to their 401k. So they're looking for anywhere to shelter.
Mm-hmm.
So just small stuff, just, you know, pointing things out here and there. And I don't know. I think it's just been really good service. He calls and he gets an answer and that's it.
Uh-huh.
So,
and why do you think he can get an answer with you guys where he has trouble with other people?
I think he gets an answer elsewhere, but like I've made just a big point of just like through the roof, you know, white glove service. Just get him an answer and that's it. And so anytime he calls in, he's a priority. But I don't know. I can't speak for others, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the monthly calls go a long way. He gets the monthly calls. I don't know. The breadth, I think maybe we can do everything. We'll see. It'll be interesting how those calls go or how the meetings go.
Why don't you ask him those questions?
Yeah, I think that's good.
I mean, what are the, you know, a good question is, you know, we're really interested in this relationship. What are the three things that you value the most from the experience that you've had with us?
Mm-hmm. And I think this is part of that, what do you call it? The referral tool that you use, the mastermind group kind of deal. Right? With CPAs and
the
attorneys?
VIPSA.
Yeah. That's right. Like I was trying to remember what that term was.
Yeah. The VIPSA question. What are the three things that you value the most from this relationship? And then, you know, you can always ask him, what are a couple of things that you think we could do better that would help serve you? And, you know, that's always, and then it's kind of a survey.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd make sure that you do that. Now, are you guys asking the question, the enthusiastically endorsed question, of everybody?
Not of everybody. No, that's somewhere where we can be better. We definitely do it for some top-end clients, just because, you know, people tend to hang around people that look like them.
So, make this on every single agenda that you have for every single client. Every month have a different topic that you discuss on the enthusiastically endorsed list.
Okay.
So this month it's estate planning attorney. Can you enthusiastically endorse your estate planning attorney? Next month, it's do you have an attorney and can you enthusiastically endorse him? Not a state planning attorney, a general attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Can you enthusiastically endorse your CPA? Is he an attorney? It's a great way to be referred to people without asking for a referral.
Yeah, and that's somewhere where, you know, especially me, that's a goal this year, is to build that up better.
Okay,
Get
so then I
more
want you to
business from
have a
referrals.
master, I want you to have a golden Rolodex of the most enthusiastically important, you know, enthusiastically endorsed professionals in your community. Now, keep in mind that your community in Carmel is going to be different than your community in Southside. Okay, maybe different than the one in Indianapolis. It may be the same. People are willing to travel in Indianapolis. It's interesting. Some communities, they're just not willing to go over a river
Sick, isn't it?
that splits the city. They will not go over the river. So you either have an attorney on that or a CPA on that side of the river, or they won't. No, it's crazy. But that's Davenport, Iowa.
Really?
Yep.
I guess it's a little bit that way down in Boca too, though, right?
No, people don't
No?
care here.
Oh, I
No.
thought people wanted somebody on Boca.
No, they don't want anybody in Boca. They don't care about them. No, they don't. There's nobody in Boca. That's really, I mean, I know I have some clients here that, I mean, I, you know, there's some people I could refer to here, but they're not here. They're in Sarasota or
Gotcha.
they're, there's nobody here. It's too small market. Big economic market. It's just too small physical
Yeah.
market. But you will have that in Boston. You'll have South Shore, North Shore, West, downtown. People will not go anywhere other than their market.
That's funny.
So you almost need four different CPAs in Boston. Three. One, two, three, four. Four CPAs, yeah. So, you
We're
know,
lucky
that's
then.
just, yeah, you're very lucky. It's a different kind of world you live in. It's a much more fluid world where people don't. I mean, in LA, you can't go anywhere in less than an hour. Yeah, we never went to the beach. Courtney was on the east towards the mountains, and to go to the beach, you'd have to go through. You'd have to it'd take you. No, it's no distance. It would take you an hour and a half. So we went once, I think. You can't drive around LA. It's just almost impossible.
When did you live in LA?
Well, she did. Courtney did.
Oh, okay.
So we know that. So, you know, but I coach people in all different markets and I try and understand that. But that enthusiastically endorsed will really help you to be, I mean, you realize this CPA that you're working with now, what that can do. Well, you know, why is that different? Yeah, he's a family office group CPA, sure. But, you know, high net worth CPAs are goldmine. So, anyway, plus you know, these people need people.
Yeah, that's
If you
something that
can't,
I've, you know, we've got an accountant that I need to be better about that, because I've got an accountant that is okay, and but I don't feel overly excited to refer business there, and so I know that's a change that needs to happen. I just need to do my homework there.
right. You need to have an accountant that you love, right? That you think is the greatest guy in the world. Have you ever called on Mike Laser?
No, who's that?
He's a CPA in Indianapolis that worked with Tom Buck. Referred a ton of business to him.
Mike,
And he,
what's his last name?
Razor, RAZOR.
Oh, okay.
But I always liked him a lot. I thought he was terrific. He was very enabling, though, for Tom. Because I went out on some calls and thought that they had, you know, taken a few liberties with some older people and so forth. And
yeah.
He was very supportive of Tom, and I kind of told him I was watching. And so they behaved. But he's kind of, Tom's obviously out of the picture. I'm sure his daughter's not a, not Tom. In terms of servicing clients, there was a lot of stink there. I don't know whether he got stumped by it, but he was always a good, a really good guy. And he had a he had a mastermind group for people that sold their businesses.
Huh.
So just tell him I referred you and that I thought an awful lot of them and that you guys should have lost.
Yeah, I'm pulling up his profile right now.
I don't think he's close to retirement yet.
I think he's getting close. I'm trying to do the math here. He got his bachelor's in 77, so then he was born about 55. So he's about 65.
Yeah. But he may want to work some more, or he may have a good team.
Yeah.
You know, might be a good guy to refer, you know. Anyway, Cindy Bowie uses him. You do some business with her.
Yep.
See, you don't know who her CPA is.
Well, Kim works with her. I bet Kim does.
Yeah, well, that doesn't do you guys any good if you don't do anything with it.
Yep.
Talk to her.
Hey. Yeah.
You know,
I'll see what we come
look,
up with.
It's all under your nose. You know that, right?
Yeah, isn't that the truth? It seems like they're all right there, huh?
It's all sitting under your nose, all the business. You're on a mountain of diamonds, and you're searching all over the place for where are the diamonds, and you're sitting
yeah.
on top of them.
Yeah, and speaking of, I had a meeting. I had a meeting for, it's not a large endowment, but it's an endowment that we work with just because of, we have a larger client that's on the board, and his family is one that kind of has started it and donated the money to it and everything. So it's like $600,000. It's small.
Mm-hmm.
But we work with them and everything. And one of the people on the board just had a question because our performance was really good last quarter. And so he started asking a few questions. So I followed up with him afterwards. And I just offered to put together like a retirement and estate plan. I didn't know where he was financially.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, a retirement plan is of no interest to me. I own my I'm reading you his email. I own my business of 100-plus employees. I hope to sell my business in 5 years, which will take care of retirement. But my goal is to take care of my children. I've started investing $50,000 a month in an account for his kids.
Mm-hmm.
So he's pulling $600,000 a year just out of income to save in this account for his kids. So that's another one I'm working on now. He sent me his allocation and everything. Unbelievably, they've got a 5% allocation directly to an energy index.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so he's getting killed right now. So that's one that I'm trying to work on, too.
How long have I been telling you no energy stocks?
I know it. So maybe that, you know, hopefully that's something that facilitates a move, is them allocating 5% outright in addition to, you know, they got 50% and just a moderate ETF allocation. So I'm sure there's some energy in there as well. And they got a value fund, you know, so it's more than 5%.
Right.
So they're probably overweight energy, really.
You know what I hear from these guys? That all these MLPs and all this REITs and all this crap, okay, because they're trying to get income for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you start stretching it, and you know, it tends to backfire. People don't realize the risk they're taking in it.
It makes me nauseous thinking about it. Seriously.
Yep.
There's certain things you just know, you know? You don't know why you know them, you just know them. And I just know it's just not a good place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And a depleting asset, you know, I don't care how you dress it up and make it look good. It's a depleting asset that is not going to be the place to be. It's like owning Ford, you know? There's so many good things going on. You've got a whole revolution in the economy. You've got awesome opportunities.
Yeah. What's just so I kind of know, and I'll use you as a sample just for other clients. You know, I know you guys raised some cash. What's kind of your target, or what's your sign of when you start getting back in?
I'm probably going to stay where I am.
Okay.
I'm 30% fixed income, 70% stock. It's going to be less stock, more income now as the stocks go down. But I'm going to try and be good and have more of a balanced portfolio for some time.
Okay.
Not because I want that, but because I need that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was 93% invested in equity,
mm-hmm.
which was too much. So Kim and I set a plan of being 60-40 when the party stopped, and I'm 70-30 now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the party has stopped for a while, and so this is not going to be a V, okay? So don't tell people that. It is not going to be short-lived. This will take a while, and we'll be smarter. The world will be better, just like 1998 when they what happened was we had a same kind of thing, a perfect storm. We had long-term capital collapsing, causing a crash in this in our market. At the same time, the Far East, their accounting principles were terrible, and it took those countries down. So South Korea, all Malaysia, Singapore, a little bit of Japan. Japan was better, but the others were a mess accounting-wise. And so they basically created supervision, accounting regulations, and fixed themselves. China didn't. China is probably going to go through a 1998 version of long-term capital crisis because they are a mess accounting-wise. And they'll probably fall more in line with the rest of the world and show more transparency, but they're highly leveraged and a bit of a mess. And so they will not be able to sustain this body slam. And so they will extend the correction and force until they make some changes. They'll come out better. Hong Kong will come out better, but they will be somewhat slammed by this. In the meantime, it will have effects on everybody else, just like the Far East did on us, and it took a while to recover. Now, the Fed came to the rescue then, just like they did in 1987, but they can't come to the rescue now because we don't have 14% interest rates, or we don't have even 10% or 7% interest rates. We have no interest rates. And so when you are that low, the impact of lowering rates or lowering the discount rate doesn't have the same impact. So they can add liquidity and they can do all kinds of things to appear as though they're doing something, but it has much less effect on the economy. It helps to have oil prices down in half. That's a stimulus to the economy. It helps to drop interest rates. That helps small businesses with their cash flow. They'll probably announce this afternoon something in the way of unemployment payments or deferred taxes or something to help people, hospitalization, deferment costs or something like that. So they'll make some announcements this afternoon that will have some impact.
Yeah.
But when everybody's staying home, it just puts a slam on the economy.
Yeah. What I've read is the expectation is an extended paid family leave for sick people. And then there's also an expectation for a lot of the businesses in the travel industry for delayed tax due dates. So for airlines, hotels, cruise lines, you name it, they're going to have delayed tax deadlines. It's kind of the expectation. You know, we'll see what else happens. One thing that has not been referenced very much in the news, and I find extremely interesting, is if you just look at a global map of the outbreak, up until last week, it was 100%. Now it's about 95% in the northern hemisphere. Meaning, we have yet to see exactly what, warmer weather's impact will be, but it seems to me like it's going to follow the path of the flu a little bit.
Yeah.
Where it just kind of dies out in the summer.
Yep.
But we'll see what comes of that. The other interesting thing is Johns Hopkins, I don't know if you've looked at this dashboard yet. Has Trent or Kim walked you through this dashboard?
No.
If you have your computer in front of you, look at Johns Hopkins. Just look up Johns Hopkins coronavirus dashboard.
Okay.
And they have a link there. It's like an interactive map. You'll find it on their website. And they track every confirmed case on a map where you can look at trends, what are infectious trends, what are recovery trends, what are total recoveries, total deaths. I mean, you can break it down however you want. It's very, very good. I think it's interesting that of 100 and right now, total confirmed cases are 111,362. Out of those total confirmed cases, there have been 62,392 recoveries. That's a huge number that you don't find reported anywhere on the news.
What happened to the rest?
Well, they're either still active or there's 3,800, almost 3,900 total deaths.
Yep.
But, I mean, again, take that with, so 111,000 total cases, almost 81,000 of those are at ground zero in China. I'll round up and call it 3,900 deaths. A little bit over 3,000 of those are at ground zero in China. So it's just good. It's just data. You know, it puts something behind it other than just headlines that, you know, news cases will try to track however they want to track them. But it's just a very good I've found myself checking the website almost daily.
Really?
Just for changes and updates. I mean, like, you can even see, like, here's a great point. Chicago has 7 cases. Of those, 2 have already recovered. 5 are still active.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I just, it's really good data because you don't ever hear anything about some of those numbers.
You don't hear about recoveries. You just hear about more and more people sick.
Yep, a little bit over 62,000 people have completely recovered and been released from the hospitals.
Well, we're in the panic stage. You know, every market has a, you know, that's, there's a panic stage to a market, and this is it. So the question is, do you, I'm pretty good about buying when others are puking. So I will probably be in the camp of doing tax swaps, which I like to do when things sell off a lot. I take advantage of. So that would be something that I would, you know, advertise to my clients as an action step. Let's do a tax swap. Let's do some tax swaps.
Yeah.
And obviously dollar cost averaging if they can afford it. You know, if they didn't stay too long to the party.
Yeah, I've started doing some of that with clients. Seems like the more patient clients understand that and they're all about it.
Yeah. So I'm not saying, my prognosis like a week ago was that this was going to take, that this was a shock to the economic system, that it would drive us into negative GDP for 2 quarters. We would officially have a recession, and that it would then, we would begin to recover. So it would be more like a U than it would be a V or a W.
Mm-hmm.
And by the third quarter, we would be pretty well recovered, although shaken. And by the end of the year, we will be up 10%.
Mm-hmm.
So from beginning to we're down what, say 7% or something on the year?
13.5.
Oh, we're down 13. We were up what, 13 or so, right?
I think we were up like 6.
No, I was up more than that.
Yeah, you were. Yeah, you. I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was probably up 13 or something. Courtney was up 13 in her portfolio. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're probably down 10. And you're saying we're down 13.
Yep, 13.5 on the S&P.
So, you know, that's not a terrible year.
No.
But, you know, that's a big, big, you know, you go down 13, you got to go back a lot more than 13.
Yeah. I'm going to send you a research report right now that I think it's interesting. You mentioned that U-shaped recovery. This was just published. I don't know if you have your email in front of you either. Just published this morning, and the headline of the article is A Deeper U. And so they adjusted the U.S. forecast to reflect a deeper U-shaped recovery, meaning that now that we've had this drop, they originally were expecting a V. So what they've done is they're still projecting no recession, They've revised down second quarter GDP to 1% from 1.6, lowered third quarter to 1.4%. Interestingly, they marked up first quarter GDP to 1.5, but they said it's for bad reasons because trade volumes globally have been crushed and, you know, yada, yada, yada.
People are hoarding paper towel, right?
Yep. Yeah. So I think that's very interesting. And then, you know, for a while now they've been saying it's going to just expect a spring loaded year where you're going to see the major returns probably in the second half or, you know, second half of the year.
Right.
So.
But you still don't have people. Do you have people panicking yet? Calling?
The normal actors, I think. I think the people that call in panic are our typical contrarian indicators.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for whatever reason, the coronavirus doesn't worry people as much. I think a lot of people have kind of worked to educate themselves and really be aware of its true impact. And at the end of the day, I think it's important. I think it's going to be impactful on economies, but I think it's going to be pretty much like a flu. And we don't shut down businesses for the flu at the end of the day. But, I mean, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it all ends up. I mean, almost all the deaths from what I've heard are elderly or prior illnesses. That sounds almost exactly like the flu to me.
Yeah, except the numbers and percentages are dramatically higher.
Yep, so far.
Right, so, you know, one of the things to keep in mind is that when you're talking to people that live in Florida that are elderly, that have preconditions, they take it a little more seriously.
Oh, absolutely, and that's what I mean. I think it's very important for individual families, but from a global economy standpoint, I think it's been overshot.
Oh, I think they're just now getting the idea of what it's going to be like. I don't think it's been overshot.
Yeah, well, and that's where it comes from. There's so much unknown. Nobody knows, you know.
Right, right. My bet is that. The cases are, here's the problem, Tyler. They don't know how many cases there are.
Yep, I agree with that.
And what's happening is they're getting more and more cases in a shorter and shorter period. So, meaning it took 10 days to get a certain number of cases. Now it's taking 5 days to get that same number of cases. Then it'll take 3 days. Then it'll take 2 days. Then it'll take 1 day. So your number of cases are increasing a lot. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
In a shorter and shorter period of time. So it's the testing that is the problem. That people have it but don't know it or aren't being tested for it in the U.S. I'm just talking the U.S.
Yeah.
And so once they get it, they go in and they get. So we're not at that epicenter yet. That could happen by Friday. Okay, it could be next week.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're getting closer, but I have no idea what the stock market's going to do between now and then.
Yeah, that's very
true. As more and more cases come in, but it looks like we don't have a handle on how many there are. That's what's going to freak people out.
Yeah.
So that's why I say it's not going to be forever, but it's going to be it's going to be more fun.
Yeah. I Look at that dashboard I gave you, because there's a lot of good information there. Like I said, they put in trend lines and everything. You can see daily cases, daily recoveries. It's just really good. So there's a lot of information there. I've gotten more information from there than anywhere else.
Okay. I'll buy that.
We'll see.
We're not going to reverse Amazon and Google and Facebook and Netflix and That's why I'm not, 25% equities. I'm still 70% equities, so I'm still getting smashed when things get smashed, and I have plenty of upside when it goes up. But I'm not 100% invested in the equity market because I don't know. I don't know, and there's no Fed. I knew the Fed was there all the other times. There's no Fed. And the government, I just don't have the confidence in the government right now.
Yeah.
To come through and do something meaningful that is actually going to help. So I don't mean to throw all that on you, but that's how. And, the average person is still oblivious. I mean, they're still oblivious.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a party last night. We're planning a party here at the end of March. And I said, did anybody think about the fact that, we may be shut down here on Boca Grande? And, you can't come in, can't leave. They go, what? They go, what? What are you talking about? I said, it's kind of the elephant in the room. What if we have to cancel this party? We got a band coming. We got all these people coming. Kids coming. So there's a bunch of guys' 70th birthday. I said, I think we should make some contingency plans. Especially for a 70-year-old.
Yeah.
Just think, if you're 70... and the whole world was made up of 70-year-olds with preconditions. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now look at this thing. That's a 10% kill rate.
Yeah. Yep. Like I said, I think it's very impactful. I think it's very important. I just have to judge it from economic standpoints and I don't know. It's to be told still.
I kidded that it would be the greatest transfer of wealth in the history of the economy.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It all happened like in a year. And so I hope this thing dies with the sun.
Yeah.
That's the key.
We'll see. We're just getting to that point.
And then we have to have then we need the medicine developed by then. I think they have it now. They have it. There was one company I just read about that has the immunization.
Okay.
But, it takes, even though they expedite it, it's still going to take probably 9 months to get it out.
Yeah, I believe that.
So we'll see, won't we, huh?
Yeah, it's a story that's still being written. It's just
right.
So hard to tell.
So that was John Hopkins coronavirus or something?
Yeah, I'd look up Johns Hopkins coronavirus dashboard is kind of what I've looked up.
Okay, thanks.
And then it's a really good map. Well, we'll keep on it, Rob, and we'll let you know if we see anything change on this side. But
okay.
Thanks for the talk.
You're welcome. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.